A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and I have to say, the timing is almost too perfect. He was extracting a mini PC that had been VHB taped to a wooden desk. And I mean really bonded. The kind of bond where you wonder if the manufacturer expected anyone to ever separate these things. He's working the spudger in, getting leverage, and the tip just 45 degrees. He got it off eventually, but the tool came out looking like modern art.
That moment where you feel it give way, not the adhesive, the tool, is one of the most demoralizing things in electronics repair. You're not even angry at the device, you're angry at physics.
That's exactly what Daniel's asking about. He wants to know if there's a unit of measure on the spec sheet that tells you how thin a pry tool actually is, whether you can have something that's both ultra-thin and incredibly strong, and how far you can push metallurgy before you have to compromise one way or the other. Basically, is the perfect spudger out there? Or is this a material science problem with no solution?
Right to repair momentum means more people are cracking open devices that were actively designed to stay shut, and the tool gap between what we need and what's actually being sold is becoming really obvious. You can buy a $50 repair kit and still end up with a spudger that bends the first time you lean on it.
The universal electronics repair experience. You swear, you stare at the bent tip, and then you go looking for something else to jam in there. Usually something you definitely shouldn't be using.
We've all done it.
Which then scratches the board or slips and takes out a surface. Mount capacitor, and suddenly your repair has become a much bigger repair. I did that once with an old router. Just trying to pop the case open, flathead slipped, and I watched a capacitor the size of a grain of rice just vanish into the carpet. Never found it. Router never worked again.
That's the hidden cost of a bad pry tool. It's not just the bent tip, it's the collateral damage. And the worst part is, in that moment, you know it's your fault for using the wrong thing, but you also know the right thing just bent on you 30 seconds earlier.
The question Daniel's really asking is, can we do better than the bent spudger? Or is this just the deal we make with the universe?
Here's the thing. A pry tool is always being asked to do two jobs that actively hate each other. On one side, it needs to be thin enough to slip into a gap that's maybe a fifth of a millimeter. On the other, it needs to be strong enough to resist bending when you're leaning into a 15-centimeter handle with enough force to break an industrial adhesive bond. Those requirements are basically at war.
What makes a good one? Because Daniel's clearly been through a few, and they all eventually fail one way or the other.
A good spudger is the one that fails last. And where it fails tells you everything about which side of the trade-off the manufacturer prioritized. If the tip is thin enough to get into anything but bends immediately, they optimize for access and sacrifice strength. If it's stiff as a crowbar but won't fit under a screen bezel, they went the other way. Every tool on the market is somewhere on that spectrum. Nobody solved both.
The physics behind that is actually kind of brutal.
It's the cube law. The resistance of a flat blade to bending scales with thickness cubed. So if you take a spudger that's half a millimeter thick, pretty standard, and you shave it down to a quarter millimeter to get into a tighter gap, you haven't halved its stiffness. You've reduced it by a factor of 8.
8 times flimsier for half the thickness. That feels like the universe charging interest.
It's worse than interest. It's compounding against you. And Daniel's scenario makes this worse. VHB tape, very high bond strength, we're talking something like 50 newtons per square centimeter. He's trying to separate a mini PC that's been bonded to wood, which means he needs real leverage. A 15-centimeter handle gives you a lot of mechanical advantage, but all that force concentrates right at the tip, the thinnest part of the tool.
You've got maximum force meeting minimum cross-section. That bend is basically inevitable.
It's not just thickness. The material itself has what's called a yield strength, the point at which it deforms permanently instead of springing back. Once you cross that threshold, the spudger is bent. You can have a blade made of the best spring steel available, but if it's thin enough for sub-millimeter gaps, the math just catches up with you eventually.
The perfect spudger. ultra-thin and ultra-strong, might genuinely be a material science contradiction.
At least with what we can manufacture affordably and put in a consumer repair kit. There are exotic alloys and treatments that push the line a bit, but nobody's repealed the cube law.
What about the edge cases? Like, are there manufacturing techniques that cheat the cube law by changing the geometry instead of the material?
That's the right question to ask, because geometry is the one variable you can play with without changing the material. And this is where the feeler gauge comparison gets really interesting. A feeler gauge isn't tapered the way a spudger is. It's a constant thickness along its length. That means the stress is distributed evenly instead of concentrating at a single transition point. But the trade-off is, you can't get the same leverage because you don't have that thick handle section to grip.
The taper is both the spudger's best feature and its fatal flaw.
The taper gives you a handle you can actually hold and apply force to, but it creates a stress riser right where the blade thins out. It's a classic engineering compromise. You're trading uniform strength for usability. And most manufacturers don't even optimize the taper profile. They just grind it down and ship it. To understand why that math is so punishing, you need to know the difference between yield strength and ultimate tensile strength. Most people think about when something snaps, that's ultimate tensile strength. But a spudger doesn't snap. And once it bends, it's useless, even if it never breaks in half.
The failure happens way before the dramatic breaking point.
Yield strength is the stress level where the metal stops being elastic, stops springing back, and deforms permanently. For a pry tool, that's the only number that matters. 301 stainless spring steel, in its full hard condition, has a yield strength of about 1400 megapascals. That's impressive. It's what makes it spring steel. But even that has limits.
The cube law you mentioned doesn't care how impressive your steel is.
It really doesn't. Take a half millimeter blade, that's standard in most repair kits. Have it to a quarter millimeter to get into a tighter gap, and you've reduced the bending resistance by a factor of 8. So a 0.3 millimeter spudger isn't just a little flimsier than a 0.5, it's dramatically weaker. That's why Daniel's tool folded at 45 degrees. The thickness dropped, the leverage stayed the same, and the math collected its debt.
What about the material itself? Daniel's asking how far you can push metallurgy. Are there steels that laugh at 1400 megapascals?
You can go higher, but you trade something every time. 1095 high carbon steel can hit similar or slightly higher yield strengths, but it's brittle. If you over-temper it even slightly during manufacturing, it'll snap instead of bending. A snapped spudger inside a device is worse than a bent one, because now you've got a sharp metal shard near a circuit board.
Like adopting a feral cat.
Then there's titanium, which a lot of people assume is the answer to everything. Titanium alloys have great strength to weight ratios, but their modulus of elasticity is about 110 gigapascals versus 200 for steel. That means titanium deflects twice as much before it yields. For a pry tool, that's a disaster. You need stiffness to transfer force into the gap. A bendy titanium spudger feels premium but does the job worse.
Titanium is the glockenspiel of repair tools. Sounds fancy. Doesn't actually help.
Now, there's another problem most people don't think about, and it's geometry. Almost every spudger is tapered, thick at the handle, thin at the tip. That seems obvious, but it creates a stress concentration right where the cross-section shrinks. The stress at that transition point can be 3 times the nominal stress you'd calculate for the full thickness.
The tool is concentrating force at the weakest point. That's like designing a bridge and putting the narrowest support beam right where the trucks drive over.
Precisely where you don't want it. The tip carries the highest bending moment from your leverage, and it's also the thinnest part. It's a double penalty. That's why spudgers almost always fail right at the tip, not in the middle, not near the handle. The taper guarantees it.
Daniel mentioned wanting something stronger. Are coatings part of the answer?
Nitriding, diamond-like carbon coatings. They're great for wear resistance. They'll keep your spudger from getting scratched up. But they don't meaningfully increase bulk yield strength. They're a surface-level solution to a volume-level problem. You can't coat your way out of the cube law.
The spec sheet tells a story if you know how to read it. A 0.2mm feeler gauge made of spring steel can actually be stronger than a 0.5mm generic stainless spudger, because the feeler gauge is probably 1095 or 3, or 1 at full hardness, while the spudger might be 304 stainless with a yield strength around 200 megapascals, 7 times weaker.
That's the misconception that trips people up. thicker feels stronger in your hand, but material grade matters just as much as thickness. A properly hardened spring steel blade at 0.2 millimeters will outperform a mystery steel blade at 0.5.
Heat treatment alone can't fix this. You can't take a cheap stainless blank and harden it into a super spudger.
No, because the alloy composition sets the ceiling. 304 stainless doesn't respond to heat treatment the way high carbon steels do. It's not hardenable by quenching. You're stuck with whatever yield strength the mill delivered. If the packaging just says stainless steel without a grade, assume the worst.
How does someone like Daniel, who's not a metallurgist, actually evaluate a tool before buying it? He's shopping online. He's got a product page with maybe 3 bullet points. What's he supposed to look for?
We've established the physics hates us. But Daniel also asked a very practical question. What do you actually look for on the spec sheet? Because most of these tools don't even have one.
He wanted to know if there's a unit of measure to watch for, and the answer is yes, but you have to know what's meaningful. Thickness in millimeters is the first thing. 0.3 millimeters is very thin. 0.5 is standard. If a manufacturer doesn't list thickness, they're hiding something.
The material designation is the other half. If you see 301 stainless spring steel, that's a green flag. If it just says stainless steel with no grade, assume it's 304, which has a yield strength around 200 megapascals, about 1/7 of what you'd get from proper spring steel.
Stainless steel alone is the musical equivalent of beige wallpaper.
It's meaningless. And heat treatment, if they don't mention it, it probably hasn't been done. A full hard temper on 301 is what gives you that 1400 megapascal yield. Skip that step and you've got expensive tinfoil.
Is there a perfect tool on the market? Something that nails both thinness and strength?
And I don't think there can be, given current manufacturing at consumer price points. Even with ideal materials, 301 spring steel at 1400 megapascals yield, a 0.2 millimeter blade will still yield under the leverage of a 15 centimeter handle if the adhesive bond exceeds about 50 newtons. That's not a design flaw, that's the physics limit.
The real solution isn't a better blade. It's changing your attack strategy.
And this is where Daniel's VHB scenario becomes a perfect case study. He's trying to muscle through an adhesive that's designed to be permanent. The tool bent because it was being asked to do something no spudger should be asked to do alone.
What should he have done?
VHB tape loses about 80% of its bond strength above 60 degrees Celsius. That's not warm, that's hairdryer territory. A heat gun, or one of those eye opener packs, softens the adhesive to the point where the spudger's job becomes almost trivial. The adhesive fails before the metal does.
You're making the glue the weak link instead of your tool.
That's the whole game. And for electronics specifically, 60 degrees is safe. You're not going to damage boards or components at that temperature. The solder reflows at well over 200.
What if heat isn't an option? Say there's a battery nearby or something heat sensitive.
Then you go chemical. Isopropyl alcohol or Goo Gone Wicked into the bond line. Capillary action pulls the solvent into the gap, and it breaks down the adhesive from the inside. The thinner the gap, the better capillary action works, so a 0.2 millimeter opening is actually ideal for this.
Which is ironic, because that's the gap size where mechanical prying is most likely to bend your tool.
The solvent strategy turns the thin gap from a liability into an asset. And it won't damage electronics. Isopropyl alcohol is what you use to clean flux off boards anyway.
Heat and solvent are your first two moves. What's the third?
Multiple thin tools. Instead of one spudger taking all the force, use 2.3 millimeter spudgers from opposite sides. Each one sees roughly half the load, which can keep both below the yield threshold. You're distributing the stress across tools that individually couldn't handle the job.
You're building a tiny team of spudgers.
A unionized prying operation. And the final option, the one that gets closest to Daniel's dream of an ultra-thin, ultra-strong tool, is making your own. A custom-ground feeler gauge blade, 0.2 millimeters, spring steel, epoxied into a handle. Feeler gauges are available from auto parts stores in thicknesses from 0.05 millimeters up to 1 millimeter, and they're almost always made of proper spring steel, 1095 or 301.
A $3 feeler gauge set from an auto parts store might outperform a $20 precision pry tool from a repair kit.
It often does. The feeler gauge is thinner, The steel is properly hardened, and you can grind the tip to whatever shape you need with a Dremel. It's not pretty, but it works. And that's the thing. Daniel's been looking for the perfect tool, but the perfect tool might be the one you make yourself out of something that was never meant to be a pry tool at all.
When should you stop looking for a better tool and change your technique?
The moment you're applying enough force that you can feel the handle flexing. That's your signal. The tool is telling you it's at its limit. If you keep going, you're going to bend it, or worse, slip and damage something. That's the point where you reach for the heat gun, or the solvent, or a second spudger.
In Daniel's case, with the VHB-bound mini PC, heat gun to 60 degrees, two thin spudgers from opposite sides, and it probably comes apart without a fight.
Without bending anything. The bond strength drops so dramatically with heat that what was a 50 newton problem becomes a 10 newton problem. Any decent spudger can handle 10 newtons.
The physics hasn't changed. You've just changed which part of the system fails first.
That's the elegant part. You're not fighting the cube law, you're sidestepping it entirely.
I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier about the feeler gauge approach, because I think there's a fun fact lurking in there. Feeler gauges were originally developed for setting valve clearances in engines. Totally different world from electronics repair.
Right. And that's actually relevant to why they work so well as improvised spudgers. Feeler gauges were designed to be inserted into gaps that are precisely controlled, thousandths of an inch, and they had to be stiff enough to give the mechanic tactile feedback. You're feeling for a slight drag as you slide the gauge through the gap. That requirement for stiffness at extreme thinness is exactly what we need in a pry tool.
The automotive industry accidentally solved the spudger problem decades ago, and nobody told the electronics repair world.
Different tribes, different tool catalogs. The crossover just never happened organically. But if you walk into any auto parts store, you can buy a set of feeler gauges that covers every thickness you'd ever need for electronics work, made of better steel than most dedicated pry tools, for less than the cost of a single name brand spudger.
That feels like one of those life hacks that should be printed on the wall of every repair cafe.
Let's boil all of that down into four things you can actually use next time you're staring at a VHB bonded component and reaching for a spudger.
Daniel's going to want the checklist version. He's a spec sheet guy.
First one, when you're buying a pry tool, look for the words spring steel or tool steel in the description and a stated thickness in millimeters. If it just says stainless steel with no grade, walk away. That's 304 stainless with maybe 200 megapascals yield, and it will bend on you.
Stainless steel alone is the pry tool equivalent of a handshake from someone who won't make eye contact.
Second, for ultra-thin gaps, 0.2 millimeters or less, skip the repair kits entirely. Go to an auto parts store, buy a feeler gauge set. They come in increments of 0.05 millimeters, they're made of actual spring steel, and they cost about $3. Grind the tip to a flathead shape with a Dremel, and you've got a better spudger than anything in a $40 kit.
The auto parts store's premium electronics repair supplier. There's something deeply satisfying about that.
Third, and this is the one that changes everything, before you pry, ask yourself two questions. Can I heat this to 60 degrees Celsius? Can I wick in some isopropyl alcohol? The tool is the last resort, not the first. VHB tape loses 80% of its bond strength with heat. You're not fighting the adhesive anymore. You're fighting a weakened version of it.
You're solving the problem before the spudger even touches the gap.
Fourth, accept the physics. No tool thinner than 0.3 millimeters will survive high leverage prying above about 50 newtons at the tip. That's not a design failure. That's the cube law collecting its debt. So plan around it. Use heat, use solvent, or use two tools from opposite sides to split the load.
Know your steel, know your thickness, soften the adhesive first, and respect the cube law. That's a toolkit for not bending your toolkit.
The perfect pry tool might not exist, but the perfect strategy does. And I keep coming back to this question, will manufacturing ever actually solve the thin-strong trade-off? Additive manufacturing, sintered tool steel, ceramic tips. People keep promising a breakthrough.
Ceramic sounds tempting until you remember it's brittle under tension. One twist, and you've got shrapnel.
And sintered metals have porosity issues. Microscopic voids that reduce yield strength below what you'd get from a rolled and hardened blank. You're fighting the cube law with a material that's already compromised. I don't think additive manufacturing gets us there, at least not soon.
The physics holds, and meanwhile, devices keep getting thinner and adhesives keep getting stronger. VHB is already at 50 newtons per square centimeter. That's not going down.
Which means the pry tool problem actually gets worse over time. I think we're heading toward a world where chemical and thermal solutions replace mechanical prying almost entirely. Heat mats built into repair benches. Solvent delivery systems designed for specific adhesive chemistries. The spudger becomes the tool you use after the bond is already broken.
The best tool is knowing when not to pry. That's really the whole episode in one line.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early 1500s, sailors in the Comoros archipelago used a knot called the shark bend, named not for the fish but from the Arabic shark, meaning east, to lash cargo against monsoon winds. The knot's defining feature was a slipped loop that tightened under load but released instantly when the standing end was flicked, making it one of the earliest known quick-release hitches in Indian Ocean maritime history.
Right. Right. This has been my weird prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this, do us a favor and leave a review wherever you listen. It helps. We'll be back soon.
Go fix something without bending it.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.